Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 83 for April 28th, 2010. Mac OS X domestic short hair. All right, it's time for We Have Communicators. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the App Store, and all that good stuff. With me here is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Michael, as always, it's great to be here. And we are officially We Have Communicators, right?
Yes, we are officially We Have Communicators. I told Dave at Backbeat, I don't know if he'll change it, you know, if he knows yet, but it's getting around. We Have Communicators is the name.
Okay, I'll do my best to remember that.
Okay, cool. Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Glad to finally have a name for this thing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And that's your name, right? You picked that. You came up with that.
I guess I kind of threw it out there. Yeah, now we need a logo. I've been working on that, too.
Yeah, I haven't even started on a website for it. Hey, am I...
That's okay. We haven't hardly started a podcast yet either.
Wah, wah. Just episode 83. Hey, do I have an echo? Can you hear me echoing? Because I'm right in front of a wall. I changed my desk around.
Not at all. You sound great.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. So the first thing off the top, because we're moving quickly this week, because last week was like 2 hours long. Apple has announced the dates for WWDC 2010, June 7th through the 11th.
Way to give me time for travel plans.
I know, right? Well, you don't really have to travel. You're in California. That's a small state,
well,
right?
I don't go anyway. The reality is I don't go to
WWDC. That's not the point.
That's not the point.
But I'm expressing empathy for developers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, now you got to scramble, get a hotel, get airplane tickets. I mean, a lot of these guys, I mean, they know it's going to be around June, but come on.
You can't book planes around June-ish.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't see that option on Expedia.
The interesting thing that I saw is that Apple will not be doing an OS X Apple Design Award this year.
Yeah, that's what everybody's been focusing on.
I think that's a little odd.
I do too.
Not.
Yeah.
However,
it's very odd.
Yeah.
But I mean, the branding too. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. That's all right. So I'll be quick so you can get on your soapbox. Yeah, just the whole thing with no ADA awards, which is actually kind of redundant because it's Apple Design Awards. Not having ADA for Mac apps just feels kind of weird because there's so many great apps out there. It would be nice to see them being recognized. But the whole thing that I'm hearing people say with, oh my God, it's the end of the Mac, Apple's going to drop Mac OS X, it's all just going to be iPhone and iPad, it is totally a crock. That is absolutely not going to happen. The Mac is selling really well. Mac OS X is doing great. It's not going away. And don't forget, if you don't have Macs, you can't write apps for the iPhone.
There you go.
So basically, Jeff, what you're saying is after WWDC, the Mac's just going to be a giant IDE platform for iPad and iPhone apps, right? That's what I heard you say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said, right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is people are reading a lot into that, but I mean, why? There should be outrage, the fact that that's not included, because it's always been that way. So I don't know why an app now has to be distributed through the App Store to be considered for an Apple Design Award. The other thing that really puzzled me when I saw the branding for it, I mean, you go to the website and the tagline is the center of the app universe, and it's a giant swirling vortex of app icons, kind of like the end of the Apple TV intro video, right, where they kind of all swirl down into the box.
Right.
Yeah, so Apple's definitely targeting it at iPhone, iPad app developers, it seems like, just from a marketing perspective as well, which is just, I mean, it's odd on one end of the scale, but it makes perfect sense on the other end of the scale, because I have to imagine that the developer community has grown exponentially because of the iPhone and the iPad.
Yeah, yeah. They're growing a new platform, is, you know, is one that has a brand new device with a different level of application on it. So I think just pushing iPad development is important.
Well, look at the timing of the event. This is happening at the beginning of June. When are we expecting new iPhones to be announced?
And, well, June.
In June, right. And when do we expect iPhone OS 4 to be released?
June.
Yeah, so let's do some leeway. Let's call it somewhere between June and August. Even still, you know, we're looking at, what, like a 2.5 month window. Now, with developer conference happening when it is, and that window we have for iPhone OS 4, this is exactly when Apple needs to be focusing really heavily on the iPhone OS, because there's a brand new version coming out. We have brand new devices that are here and on the way. They have to put a lot of focus in what's going on here. And macOS 10.7, which is what, Tabby or Domestic Shorthair? I can't remember what the name is supposed to be.
I like Domestic Shorthair.
Yeah, well, so that's not due out for months and months. So Apple can put a lot of focus on what's going on with 10.7 when it's getting closer to launch time for that. And so right now, it totally makes sense to be focusing very heavily on iPhone OS 4. And I think that macOS 10.7 will have its day as well. It's just not going to be at the beginning of June.
Do you think we're going to see any surprises for the 4.0 on the iPad?
Well, I hope so.
I feel like we're going to see a few unveilings of great iPad features at WWDC 10.
That's what I'm hoping for. And the two great features I really, really want to see, printing and better document management.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. I will second those.
Did you guys hear that Hulu's possibly going to have their iPad app ready by May 24th?
But not if you're in the UK. Ha ha ha.
No, well, you know, people in the UK get everything second because, I don't know, how is that fair? I don't think that's fair.
I'm being mean.
No.
Guys, of a joke.
Yeah, it was a...
Yes.
We love all of our friends listeners in the UK.
All of our they're not laughing right now.
Adam is anxiously waiting for your emails.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I was just responding to this story's great. Hulu coming to the iPad if you want to pay some more money, apparently.
Right. So the reason we're thinking we're going to see the Hulu app on the 24th is because there have been previous rumors about Hulu rolling out a subscription service and initially only for iPad users, which is why we're assuming that because new rumors have recently surfaced that Hulu is planning to launch Hulu Plus, the paid subscription service that we've been hearing about, we're assuming that we're going to see that debut on the iPad, if not somewhere else.
Right. Which
I'm sorry, I had to laugh because you said on the iPad or somewhere else. Well, if it's going to it has to debut somewhere. So, yeah, if it's not the iPad.
No. I mean, in addition to the iPad, I'm sorry. But it may not make it to
the
iPad at all, too.
I poke fun at you only because I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, two things that I just find a little strange about that are that. How do you say that? Just totally messed that up. Anyway, can't talk today.
Doesn't matter.
it's okay. Nobody's listening.
Exactly.
Nobody's listening to this. The two things are, one, I don't understand why anybody would want to pay for Hulu when there's already a lot of apps where I can get the same content now for free. So I'm not figuring that out. And it seems like Hulu's coming late to the iPad party. And there's already some people like the ABC, what is it, ABC app and TV.com. And those are already offering up full episodes. I'm not seeing the model, and then tack on top of that Netflix with my Netflix streaming account that I'm already paying for, and I get movies and other content. I think Hulu's missing on the content side.
Well,
for one,
the reason what they would be charging for, the $9.95 per month is what it's rumored to be at. They're planning to, you know how you have, you can only watch like five episodes.
It's infinitely annoying.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And even more so with the House episodes, you have to wait a week, which is just completely insane. They're losing money
really?
On that. That's
the same thing with the month delay on DVDs on Netflix streaming too.
They're totally losing money. I would watch it on Hulu and sit through ads. But no, I go to other websites where they don't make money. From what I watch,
this is why people BitTorrent. It's because the movie and the TV industry is so backwards with the way they distribute their content. It's a new world. They need to get caught up. I shake my fist at the media industry.
they don't understand the buying mentality. And I've said this of iTunes before, because there's been often a time when I would have got an iTunes rental, like on the spur of the moment, I'm browsing through iTunes. And I want to rent a movie. Oh, I know. Insert X movie here just came out on DVD last week. Let me see if I can rent it in iTunes. Oh, I can't rent it.
Yeah,
because they want me to go out and buy the DVD. Well, guess what? I have no interest in buying that. I just want to watch it.
Mm-hmm. And so you go watch it somewhere else.
You're willing to pay to watch it.
I'm willing to pay to watch it.
But they won't let you.
But they won't let me, and then consequently, a month later, I've forgotten. And now it's available for rent, but guess what? I don't care anymore because I've moved on.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
What is the end result to them? Well, one, I didn't buy the DVD, so they didn't get more money from me. And two, they lost the rental income. Yay! Media people. Real smart.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I also hate the whole thing with a show will come out in one country, and then it comes out later in another country.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's annoying. And right now I'm thinking of the new Doctor Who series. And yeah, so you can watch it in the UK when it comes out. You have to wait, 2 weeks in the United States?
Well, and so getting back to the UK Hulu thing, the other thing that came out with Hulu this week was they weren't unable to do a deal with the British TV market. So consequently, it sounds like that's fallen all apart. And now they don't know when they will get Hulu in the UK, and I know a lot of UK people that want Hulu, and they now use I think there's like proxies on the internet, right?
Proxy service, sure.
To go through performance, I guess, is a bit dodgy, but that's what people do. I mean, that's what we result to BitTorrent and other sources to get this media where they're cut out of the revenue.
See, that's just stupid. It shouldn't be that way. There are people all over the world that are waving dollar bills or pounds or euros or whatever.
Right.
And these companies are turning their back on that money. It's just, that is not how to run a business. I tell you what, when I'm king of the world, things are going to be different.
Well, so how do you both think this impacts the Hulu thing? So if Hulu does come, and here's my dilemma, and I'm gonna ask you guys. So if Hulu comes and it's $10 a month, and I can only get it, I would assume I could get it on my computer as well as my iPad. But frankly, where I want it is on my TV, mostly. Although I'm coming to love watching movies on the iPad. But certainly if I want to get something and I want to watch it with somebody, my iPad's not a good option. So I want it on my TV some way. Currently, the way I get Hulu and all that stuff on my TV is Boxy, but in the past, Hulu's really blocked Boxy out of the picture. And Hulu does not have a good set-top box or a way for me to get that content on my TV at the moment. So I don't know that the iPad is the ultimate solution. So the question then becomes, am I going to pay $10 a month for Hulu? I already pay $8 or $9 a month for Netflix. Is Apple going to come along with something else and want $10-$15 a month for that? And in the end, my decision is going to be, where can I get the most content for the least amount of money, right?
Okay, now here's the funny thing. When everyone comes out with their service like that, the answer to your question is going to be, I should just go back to Comcast and pay for a premium cable package.
Yep.
Yeah, because at the end, I'm still going to be paying $100 a month for whatever, you know, piecemeal services I want. And it's going to be a much bigger hassle than my Comcast, right?
Oh, right. And then you'll have a TiVo, so you can just record everything that way and then put Toast on your Mac and copy the files off of TiVo and you put them on your iPad and watch them on an airplane.
Well, I'll tell you, know, it's funny you mentioned TiVo because I'll tell you who the winner so far for me right now is, and where it's mostly lacking is content and availability of content, but I'm hoping that they solve that, is Netflix. I just got my Netflix Wii disc for my Nintendo Wii. Mm-hmm. I have Netflix on my iPad. I have it on my Wii. I have it on my TV through Boxy.
Yeah, go Netflix.
You know, they're on, they did a deal with TiVo. I think you can get Netflix through yeah. the current TiVo boxes.
Yeah, I have a TiVo HD, and I watch most of my regular television content that way.
Right. And, so they're going to continue to get my $10 a month, because guess what? I can get it wherever I want, whenever I want. And when I pause it on, you know, when I pause or stop it on one, just like the Kindle has with their books and Apple hopefully will with iBooks, I can pick it up on another device right where I left off. It's been awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
So that's the winner, is the whoever can get the most content and get on the most devices, I think, will win this race. And right now, in my opinion, Netflix has a huge lead over Hulu or anybody else.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, so the iPad camera connection kits have begun shipping. And I remember we talked about how they might enable USB audio. Well, it turns out it does. So that little USB, you plug it into the bottom, into the dock connector. There's a USB port on the bottom. I think you get two adapters. One has a USB and one has an SD card slot. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, there's two different adapters. Mm-hmm. You got to buy each one separately.
Oh, really?
Yes. I thought they came as a package.
I thought they came as a package,
they
too.
They do?
I think they do. Yeah. Oh, I think that's why they call package. It a kit.
That on me. That's awesome, then.
Yeah, so you get that. It supports the standard USB audio. Tidbits used a USB headset microphone, and works great. And you can also use USB keyboards.
Now, just to be clear, when Tidbits did their test with their headset, they had audio in their ears, and they were able to talk into the mic and get it into their iPad, right?
That's my understanding of it.
That's my understanding, too.
That they used it for Skype, and what's the... is there anything else in that you're trying to... get across?
I'm just looking for clarification to make sure I interpreted what they were saying correctly. Because if I did, then that means if you have a set of like USB speakers that you want to plug in.
Oh, yeah.
Pump audio out of those, like at a party or whatever. Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I'm really interested in is if this allows the... the iPad to output audio to more than one source, because that would be fantastic for DJ apps.
From what I understand, it doesn't do that. But I don't know if that's a hardware or software thing.
I'd say that's a software thing for sure.
I would hope so, because if it's a software thing and you could plug in a USB rig to your iPad, there's a lot of mixing and stuff you could do. That would be very cool.
Yeah, I still think that the iPad is better suited as an external controller. But, you know, we've talked about that a lot.
The obvious thing to mention here, too, is that any of these devices that you're connecting to it can't require a lot of USB power.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So... depending on what your device is, because the other thing that they discovered is that USB keyboards also work.
Yeah.
But not if you have a high-powered hub on that USB keyboard. So if it's the type of keyboard that passes through power where you can plug in, so like Apple's wired keyboard that has the USB ports on it.
The full keyboard?
Yeah, apparently doesn't work. But if you just have a simple USB keyboard that's just a keyboard, it's likely going to work.
Oh. Yeah, I would assume that the large keyboard would work unless you plug something else into the hub on the keyboard. But
I guess it draws a certain amount of power. So if you have an illuminated keyboard too, that, you know, so not in addition to the keyboard needing power from the USB, but also has internal thing that would draw more power, may or may not work.
Right.
So I would imagine the same goes for any kind of audio devices.
Yeah.
So I would assume like a USB mic, like a condenser mic that draws power, probably won't work.
Do we know if anyone has tried plugging in a powered USB hub and then running devices through that?
I think that's your challenge, Jeff.
Yeah, well, my first challenge is actually getting a hold of one of the kits. They're not in the stores.
Oh, they're not? Okay.
No, all the kits they made are going out to people that did pre-orders.
Ah.
Okay. Oh, is that true? Because I was going to swing by the Apple store tonight and try and get one. And after you guys told me it includes both connectors, I thought they were $29 each.
You should double check that, but I'm pretty sure.
No, I just looked on Apple's website. Yeah, I think you guys are right. Or at least it shows them both.
It also imports the full resolution images along with the EXIF data, which is awesome for photographers and people who care about that.
Yeah. That's a very, very big thing.
Yeah.
That's a really important thing. And that's a huge thing.
Yeah. Yep. You guys remember that company, Siri? You remember that application for the iPhone? It came out.
I have it on my iPhone. I think it might have been. Was it my pick one week?
It could have been a pick. Yeah. I don't remember. But for those who don't remember what Siri is, they call it a personal assistant. And the reason they call it that is because you simply say something to it and it just does it. So you say, Google Adam Christensen, and it'll give you a web page. It'll search for it. Or I don't
know. Even better than a web page. Initially, it comes back with kind of, it's almost like iChat style results, little bubble balloons, and it'll come back with the results in there, and then you can click through. So it's kind of nice because it's almost like in app.
You remember ever seeing the video, the proof of concept video Apple did years and years ago for the Knowledge Navigator?
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't this kind of feel like we're getting towards that now? I mean, we have the iPad, we have all these other things that are coming along, and now all of a sudden Apple buys Siri?
Yeah, so Apple purchased Siri, confirmed today, I believe.
Oh, did I ruin your reveal?
No, it's fine. It doesn't matter. I was just giving the information before I gave the topic. But yeah, so Apple bought it. Do we know how much it was for?
$11 billion.
Yeah, something like that.
Super not expensive, I bet.
Well, the application, not that it's relevant to that, but the application's free. It's on the App Store still. No idea how long it's going to be there, but if you hear the show, search for it if you haven't played with it yet, and play with it because it's very cool. You can just throw things at it that you'd assume, you know, can you do like a what time is it, or what's the temperature, or what's the forecast, that kind
you
of stuff?
You can ask it any natural language thing, and it also does the geolocation thing. So, you know, if you're at a place, we used it on our way up to Macworld, so I could launch Siri and say, where's the nearest In-N-Out?
Yeah,
return the results.
It also does stuff. It works with a bunch of different technologies like OpenTable, so you can, it looks like you can even reserve stuff.
Even
by
better,
just saying,
you can tell it to get you reservations and it will do the work over on OpenTable, I think, if you've linked it up.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
That's very cool.
So one
is
really
like a personal assistant, like Knowledge Navigator thing. And it makes that's why it makes sense for Apple when you saw this acquisition. I mean, that's got to be what they're up to, because Siri in and of itself doesn't, I don't think a lot of the technology isn't Siri's technology. And
it's
what
nuanced.
I'm curious about with this acquisition is this first time Apple's bought an app? Because they're basically an app developer, right? They use Nuance.
Apple has bought tons of apps over the years. I don't know if this is the first iPad app. So we can go back very easily to iTunes.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah. They bought iTunes. Final Cut.
Mm-hmm.
They bought that.
Oh, sorry. I meant Logic. An
iPhone application.
Just a pure iPhone app developer.
Oh, okay. For that, I'm not sure. This might be the first.
Right. Yeah, because they acquired the company that did, I can never remember. Didn't they, the one for CoverFlow?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
Or did they steal that? I can never remember which ones they stole and which ones they actually...
CoverFlow they bought.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, you're right. That's kind of funny. It's hard to keep track of which ones they buy and which ones they steal.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to know how they make that determination too. It's gotta go back to like patent searches and filings, and they have to like decide, can we get away with this one or do we need to buy them?
You know, part of it might come down to whether or not they like the developer. If they go, this guy's cool, let's give him a lot of money. Or they might go, what a dick. You know,
that might have just a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the latest iPhone SDK has been released, Beta 2, and there is yet more evidence that we will be seeing video chat. Of course, the fourth generation iPhone prototype that was found by Gizmodo, or purchased by Gizmodo, had a
you
camera.
You are far too kind. Uh-huh. But anyhow, continue.
A front-facing camera, of course, was on there. So it doesn't seem like Apple's really going out of their way to hide it anymore, because we're seeing strings for various video chat related items, such as video chat has ended for a reason, or video chat declined, or your video chat was declined, something like that. Interesting thing of note is that there are no errors related to 3G or Edge. There's just stuff like the video call could not be connected because a remote Wi-Fi connection could not be established. So it just talks about Wi-Fi. So it may be that video chat will only be available over Wi-Fi.
That makes sense, as long as AT&T is involved in the equation.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so if we're talking about the iPhone prototype stuff.
Wait, before, I just one comment on, yeah, and I'm probably totally wrong on this, on the video chat, but I don't know if I mentioned it last show or on my own show. I have this gut feeling that the video chat, at least initially, is something that Apple's looking at strictly for the Game Center, Game Kit, whatever you want to call it. I think we're going to see it over there first. I don't see iPhone OS 4 launching with like video iChat app.
Why would you want to do video if you're playing a game, though?
I don't even know that it's going to be in-game. I think it might be more that pre-game chat.
Like, hey man.
Trash-talking kind of stuff. Yeah. That's just my...
Yeah.
I think that's what Apple's got it planned for. I don't know that it's going to go beyond that, at least initially. My feeling.
I can see something like that, but I am still not buying the whole thing about front-facing camera so you can hold your iPhone in front of your face and do video chats.
That's exactly why I have that instinct. Video audio chat is something that gamers like to do, especially when you're doing a multiplayer thing, and I think it'll click with them faster than the average user doing just a video chat on their iPhone.
Yeah, and there's so many people that have been so desperately wanting this video chat thing on the iPhone for so long that they go out of their way to try and make it reality. And what it comes down to is you can want to fly like Superman or have an Iron Man suit as much as you want, and it's still not going to happen. Wow.
Until it does, really went way too into
the nerd end on that.
Anyway. So I'm saying that we see that first as a Game Center app, and I'm throwing it out there right now.
You know, I'm going to stand behind you on that one. That's the most reasonable explanation for the video chat strings that I've heard yet.
I think there is evidence that it does relate to the Game Kit, Game Center.
Well, I think it was originally called Game Kit before Apple branded it at the launch event.
And then Jobs
Game Center
called it GameKit at some point, and that's where it threw me off. Anyway, so...
Well, and I think that's where I'm not positive, but I think in the SDK, it's like the GameKit APIs or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, so speaking of the next generation iPhone, there's been so much more interesting stuff coming out since then.
You mean like police raids?
Yeah. So
that kind of interesting stuff.
So the police raided Jason Chen's apartment. What was it, last week?
They actually served a warrant. If we're going to be honest,
they served a warrant.
They bust down the door.
They busted down the door because he wasn't home. Right. So for those who aren't up to speed with this, how could you? And I will, go over it briefly. So a prototype iPhone was given to a baseband engineer for testing, and he was out to a bar. He was at a bar with some friends celebrating his birthday, I believe, alcohol was consumed, and I guess he left the phone at the bar. And
worst
someone,
birthday ever.
I know. Yeah. So he didn't come back to claim it. Supposedly, someone grabbed it and held on to it for a month or so.
To be fair, he kept calling the bar asking if anyone had turned in the phone.
Over and over, according to reports.
So baseband engineer guy kept calling the bar.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. I hadn't heard that. Okay. So then this person who had the phone waited about a month until they went to Engadget and said, supposedly, hey, do you want to buy this? Engadget supposedly said no. Then they showed it to Gizmodo, and Gizmodo purchased it for $5,000. Jason Chen, one of Gizmodo's editors, then had the phone, did all of the investigating of, you know, whether this is an iPhone as far as looking at what the features were and the design and all of that, and posting photos and whatnot, as well as doing a partial disassembly of the phone. And then Apple asked for the phone back, and not sure if they've gotten it back. I'm sure they have by now.
Oh, I bet they have it.
Yep.
Well, unless it's sitting in a police evidence locker.
Right, yeah. So then several days later, the police, with a warrant, came to Jason Chen's house. Jason was not home. His door was broken down, and I believe it was React.
It wasn't broken down. It was still on the hinges.
Okay, so they busted it open.
Okay, they totally busted it open.
Yes, and took all his computers, iPads, stuff like that. And
they did, when he got home and was there, just again, to clarify things, they did tell him that he could be reimbursed for the door.
For the door, yes.
Right, and that's just standard. I mean, the door being broken open, that's totally normal. It's not like these guys went and did something, you know, commando ninja style.
Right.
When you go to serve a warrant like this, if no one's home, then you kick the door open and you go in and do your stuff. And realistically, they probably took like a crowbar and went crack, and it just kind of popped the frame a little bit. It doesn't matter. It still totally ruined the door. But
yeah,
but you know, the whole idea of guys in the commando outfits with machine guns and throwing flashbangs in.
Right.
Where's the iPhone?
Like, guys swinging through the window.
Yeah, helicopters and all. As cool as that sounds, that is so not what happened.
Yep. Yeah, okay. And just so everyone's on board and clear about this, Jeff used to be an officer of the law.
Right, but not in California.
Not in California. So you're not familiar with you know, specifics there. Supposedly, Gawker Media, Gizmodo's parent company, their counsel gave Jason a letter saying that, according to California law, journalists can't be, you can't issue a warrant for evidence that is used by a journalist to report. Is that correct, Jeff? You should weigh in, because you know more about this, I think.
Yes, and I think that the person that wrote this, which, if I'm wrong, someone will let me know, but the person that wrote this actually is not a licensed attorney in the United States.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's someone that was a barrister in the UK, and a barrister is the same thing as being an attorney here.
Sure, but you still have to go to school for all the American
right,
laws.
You have to pass a bar exam, yeah. And then you have to get sworn in and all that, and so none of that happened. That may not have any bearing on this whole thing, but the letter itself, I mean, if someone had ever handed me a letter like that, I'd say, okay, thank you, and then I'd file it away with the rest of the evidence and continue on.
Which I believe that's what they did.
That's exactly what they did.
Well,
but the letter itself, what I think they're doing is stretching the interpretation of what the law is there for. It's there to protect journalists that are doing like whistleblowing and you know, the kind of stuff where, let's say, you uncover something that the government is doing that's completely wrong. and your sources give you all this information. You run the story, and now you have senators that are in trouble. Okay, by putting laws like this in place, you are protecting the journalists and their sources from the government and from big businesses that could otherwise wield too much power and really screw someone over and essentially take over the media and what they can say and what they can do. It does not, however, protect someone from breaking the law.
Right. So it comes down to what the police are investigating, whether they're investigating the stolen property, if they're investigating the person who actually sold the property, or if they're investigating Gawker and, by extension, Jason Chen, who had the stolen property.
You know, do you... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, do you know who had an interesting perspective on this? John Martellaro at, of all places, the Mac Observer.
You know what? I absolutely love John, and I love that he has these wonderful, insightful perspectives on what's going on in the industry, and it just, I have to say, I am so lucky to have him on the staff.
Yeah. So, Jeff's gushing aside, but probably very well deserved. I don't know John as well as you do, but when I read his, he posted a piece, I think today, about all this stuff, and Michael, a lot of things that you've brought up and a lot of things that Jeff is mentioning, and even all my review of all this stuff, I thought he brought up the most appropriate point that most of us should be thinking about, is that we're hearing all of this through these blogs and websites and things like that, and everybody's throwing in their own interpretation. The EFF, which is an organization that, you know, I admire in a lot of ways and sometimes don't, but most of the time agree with. But all of these people are doing this analysis from sort of outside the situation, and nobody's ever really going to know what's going on internally, what the police are investigating specifically. All these details are not going to be made public for a long time, potentially years.
Yeah, it's not clear that even...
You know, it's easy to sit back and go, oh, well, there's this and this and this, and make interpretations and judgments. But the reality is we're not going to know for a long time what the actual facts are.
Right. You know, and if we end up with a trial out of all this, I so want to be there to be able to watch what's going on and cover it, because it's... And when I say that, I'm not saying it from the perspective of, oh, well, you know, it's going to be like this big soap opera and we're going to get to see people's lives ruined and all that. What I want to see is, what do these people have to say? What are the arguments that both sides, the prosecution and the defense, are going to present to support their interpretation of what happened? And then also, what is the fallout going to be for those of us that cover the technology industry?
Right. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and it may have an implication on the difference between journalism and blogging, and how different sites are viewed. Like for me, the way I see Mac Observer and the way we run Mac Observer, we're journalists.
Right.
But if you look at a site like Tua, the unofficial Apple weblog, they're very clear about the fact that they are blogging. And that's okay. They're both totally valid ways to cover the news, and they come from different perspectives. And I think it's great that we have all of these different ways and of looking at things and different people offering their opinions. It's great. But I think we might see some interesting fallout about the way people that handle online news and blogging are seen by the courts.
Right. And so I think that comes in because of the blanket law that is in California that supposedly protects journalists from, you know, these types of warrants asking for information. I think that law actually talks about subpoenas and not so much about warrants, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's all about the subpoenas, but that's for those cases where they need to investigate something that doesn't involve the journalist involved in a crime.
Right. So it'll be interesting to figure out whether the judge issuing the warrant was aware of that. And if he was, aware of it, why he decided to issue the warrant, whether it's because they didn't view Gizmodo as journalists or if they figured that it wasn't included in the law.
Well, they might just believe Nick Denton is what might be going on, because I think it's really interesting to point out that everybody's saying, well, this is shield laws and blogging is journalism. And up front, my honest opinion is that a lot of blogging that's going on today, I would consider journalism.
You know, it
depends on the content and what's being reported. But a bunch of sites have pointed out this fact, and I read this today, that there's a Washington Post piece from 2009 where Nick Denton, who is the CEO of Gawker Media that owns Gizmodo, said in a quote that the specific quote I guess I should give you is, "We don't seek to do good. We may inadvertently do good. We may inadvertently commit journalism, but that is not the institutional intention of his websites."
So that is not going to go over well.
So he's been quoted as saying that what they do in terms of referring to blogging is not journalism in the past. This was from June 22nd, 2009.
Okay, now you do see the irony here. The same community that is potentially going to be impacted by some of what could come out of a court case, if that actually happens, are the same people that are doing the research and handing everything over on a silver platter to the prosecution.
Right.
Yeah. So, and just to be clear, I need to go back, and I have not had time to go back and look at the full Washington Post piece. Everything I've read has said this was a quote about him being asked about blogging and what they do. I have not personally verified it, so I want to be clear about that too. But a bunch of sites have referred to this quote as showing a contradiction to his statements now, saying that Jason is a journalist working full time for his company.
Right. Interesting. I think we have to revisit this in another show.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more information to come out and a lot more things going on. And my concern when we start talking about this stuff is sort of trying to present the facts and separating that from what sort of my opinions and my views are, because two things go in. The fact is that no charges have been filed as far as I know, and what the police were doing with this, serving this warrant, is they're doing an investigation, right?
Right.
So I feel that they should be able to do their job. Now, when the podcaster, blogger, you know, I'd never consider myself a journalist, but maybe I am, and that definition might change after all this stuff pans out. But, you know, I don't know what the police are doing, so it's hard for me to say, but on the surface of it, it seems like grabbing all this guy's equipment and things like that. From an outsider perspective, from a personal perspective, man, I wouldn't want to have it happen to me.
But no kidding.
When all the facts and details come out, we might understand exactly why they grabbed all this stuff.
And CNET,
until then, we really don't know.
CNET is reporting that the police are holding on to the evidence, and they haven't really gone through it yet because they're investigating whether that blanket shield law does actually apply in this case. So they're waiting on that right now to determine that.
And that seems like a totally prudent thing to do.
Sure.
They have all the equipment, so it's not going anywhere. So it's okay to stop and say, all right, well, let's double check and make sure that everything's being done by the book. And if it is, great. And if it's not, crap. We have to fix it right now.
Well, wow. That makes it seem bad. If that really is the case, that makes it seem bad on the judge that issued the warrant, because the warrant, I mean, if the police suddenly determine after the fact, after seizure of the equipment, that, oh, hey, maybe we shouldn't have, then don't the police rely on the judge when they go to ask for a warrant to make those decisions on whether or not
they rely on the district attorney's office or the city attorney's office. So what'll happen when you get a warrant for something like this, the police and the district attorney's office will work together, and then the police go and present the warrant to a judge, and the judge looks over everything, and if everything looks as it should, and no red flags go up, then they can go ahead and authorize the warrant. Now, if evidence comes up later on or other information is presented later on that needs additional clarification, then it's totally normal to say, okay, stop. Everything just stops until we get this sorted out because we want to make sure that we're doing the right thing and we're not screwing someone over. So the fact that this is stopping right now, okay, if it turns out that the law gets interpreted that they couldn't do the warrant and needed to do a subpoena instead, okay, that doesn't look good. But as long as the district attorney's office says, yep, okay, change in the way this is being interpreted, here's how we're doing it now, and they keep everything just up front and they're open about all of it, it'll be egg on their face, but they'll get through it and it'll be fine. If they try and do this kind of backtracking scramble thing, then it's just going to turn into a mess and it'll be ugly. And hopefully that's not what happens.
And just to stir the speculation pot a little bit more, just to make this more muddy for everybody who's listening. You know, this whole thing was supposedly laid down by the DA and the police and things like that, but it was done by something called, I guess, in Santa Clara County, the Rapid Enforcement Allied Computer Team, REACT Team Task Force. And I guess apparently Apple is on a steering committee that advises or works with that board.
Okay. Now, the other side of that is if you are a technology company in the Silicon Valley, you're probably on that committee.
True. True.
So the fact that Apple is on it is not in and of itself something that's damning.
I am not implying that, but it is an interesting fact.
Right. And I knew you weren't implying that, but I wanted to make sure that our listeners understood you were not implying that. And it absolutely is a very interesting fact.
Yep.
Okay. Like I said, just stir in the pot a little more.
All right. We have our iPhone picks to get to. But before we do that, we have to talk about our wonderful sponsor, and that is Citrix with GoToAssist Express. Adam, have you ever had to help someone with their computer? Family member, friend, someone like that, over the phone, something like that?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So how difficult does it get when you are trying to walk them through something and you don't have access to their computer?
It can be fun. It leads to some great fun conversations.
Yeah.
Click here. Wait. Oh no. You mean this? No. No. Click. No.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Conversations like that.
Yep. And so, really, the best way to overcome that and get these things done quickly, you don't want to be on the phone for several hours helping someone out with something like that. So the best way is to see someone's computer, and if you can't do that, you can't just go to their computer physically and help them out. The best way is with GoToAssist Express. And you can try it free for 30 days by going to GoToAssist.com/Allie. It's incredibly easy. What it allows you to do is you, as the person who has GoToAssist, you download the application, put it on your computer, and whenever you get a call from grandma or a friend who doesn't know too much about their Mac or PC or what have you, they call you up. You say, okay, no problem, I can help you out. Just go to this URL, type in this number, and then in about 30 seconds, I would say, you'll be able to see their screen. You'll be able to see what's running in the background. You'll be able to see the hardware, everything that's installed. If it's a Windows computer, you can see all the virus software. It's very secure, so you don't have to worry about that information going out to people who shouldn't see it. It's 128-bit SSL encrypted, and you can see exactly what's on the screen. You can control the mouse and keyboard. You can click around and do all the stuff for them. You don't even have to bother grandma with teaching her how to do some of these technical things that we all do. And you can send and receive files. If you are if you're chatting with someone on a PC, you can live chat Mac and PC. It's fantastic. It's one of the best ways to do remote help. I've used it, love it. And you can actually do it up to 8 sessions at once. So if you're an IT pro or someone who does support professionally. You can do updates on one computer while you go to another computer and work on something else. And it's just magic. It works easily, and you don't have to worry about software or anything being installed on someone else's computer, because when you end the session, it gets rid of all that stuff right when it's done. And you can try it free for 30 days by going to gotoassist.com/Allie, and that supports We Have Communicators. And we thank Citrix for their sponsorship. Now, time for iPhone picks. Right? Jeff, you want to go first?
Well, the app I was going to pick, I just realized I've already picked.
Okay.
So hold on. I'm flipping through my screen.
I'll let Adam go.
I have one I can pick.
Okay, because your quality has kind of dropped down too. I was going to hang up and...
Do you know why? It's because I was looking at my iPad and not talking to my microphone. I bet I sound a lot better now.
The quality's still low.
Oh, sorry.
But I can hang up and bring it back in while... Adam, do you have a pick?
We can blame that on Skype. Yeah, I was just going to look up a price for you. But I am going to pick the crypto badge.
Crypto badge.
Yeah, and I believe it's actually called the Secret Crypto Wonder Badge.
Okay.
Which is actually from a friend and fellow podcaster, Ken Ray, had this app built from macOS Ken. I don't know if you've run across it yet. What he's using it for is to send secret coded messages to his listeners at the end of his podcast.
Oh,
so
cool.
This is old school style. Anybody who is familiar with radio dramas from way, way back when, yesteryear, and things like that, one of the common things they would do is send out these coded messages. And you would send in or write in or through, I think, a cereal box or something like that. You would get a decoder ring
right.
with letters and numbers, right? So you and using the decoder ring, so they'd give you numbers, they'd say, the secret message this week is 6, 22, 42, 52. Three, you know, whatever, and read off a sequence of numbers, and then you dial it in with this decoder ring, and you would get a message. This brings that to the iPhone, and it has a couple different themes. It's integrated with email, so you can email it. So basically, you can write out a coded message, type it on the screen, and then you say encode. It encodes the message, and then you send it off. And then the receiving person, if they have the app, they can copy and paste that into the app and then decode the message. So it's just kind of a fun little old school toy for sending messages back and forth. And I want to say it's like $1.99 or $2.99. I was hoping to get
it. It's 99 cents.
99 cents, even better yet.
Secret Crypto Very cool. Wonder Badge.
I love the name.
Yep.
And do I sound better?
No, but that's okay. We tried and Skype wouldn't play, so it's just going to have to be what it is.
And, yeah, sorry.
Oh, and then we lost Adam.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay, but you can go ahead with your pick.
Okay, so my pick is an application that's called System, and what it
Yay!
Does, or System Activity Monitor. I can't remember which it is, but I think it's called System. And what it does is it gives you this little... view where you can look at all the different things that are happening on your iPhone, your iPod Touch, or your iPad, although it is an iPhone-specific app, so it's in the tiny window on the iPad. But it'll show you how much of your memory is being used. It'll show you how much you have that's free. It gives you information on how much storage space you have left on the device. It shows what processes are running and shows you how much of your device's CPU is being used. It gives you network data, so it shows what your current IP address is, shows your MAC address information, and shows how much of your battery's left. It's a very
this looks cool
very cool little application, and it's not too expensive. It's like $2 or $3.
It is $3, and it's called System Activity Monitor. : 3GS update with free monitor and battery level. So just search for System Activity Monitor. And it looks cool. If you're familiar with iStat, it looks like it has more ability to show you what's going on as far as processes. I think, and you get a lot more information overall. It looks cool. $3.
It's a very slick little app. It's one of those things that completely slipped under my radar, and it's been around for almost a year.
Yeah, it looks
like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was one of those things that I was chatting with one of my friends, Charles, and he says, "Have you seen this?" And he starts showing it to me, and I was like, "Oh my God, how did I miss that one?" So, very cool little app.
Yep, System Activity Monitor. And so my pick this week is AirSharing HD, and this is an iPad application, iPad-specific application, and it is, if you have an iPad, get this app, because it's just so cool. First thing it does is allows you to store whatever you want on your iPad, as you could with AirSharing for the iPhone. It's an application that allows you to, over Wi-Fi, send files, use your iPad as an external storage device, kind of like a thumb drive. And actually, because the iPad allows you to transfer files back and forth using iTunes with applications that allow it, AirSharing HD actually allows you to plug in to your computer, and so you can get really fast transfers. So if you want to dump a couple movies on there, you can do that. So it's a full file browser. You can put as much stuff in there as you want. You can't, of course, browse through your iPad's system files, but you can load it up full of stuff and access that from there, pull it off when you get to your destination, whatever you want to do. It's very cool. You can also, my favorite part about this, the thing that just made me freak out when I saw that you could do this, you can actually, and this may be allowed in AirSharing on the iPhone, but you can browse servers such as SSH, FTP, MobileMe, WebDAV stuff, mail servers. So if you have Gmail or something, put that in there too. See all your stuff. It's just, you can do so much stuff with this. I think you can even print with this.
Well, that's cool.
I'm looking through screenshots, so I haven't tried that part. But it looks like you can even print to it. So you can read your email, you can print. So if you're one of those people who, prints out your emails or something like that, you can do that.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't do that. Save the environment. Don't do that. You can just do so much stuff. So if you're looking for something to manage files, to allow you to store files on your iPad, this is the way to do it. It's called AirSharing HD. It's $10. The only drawback, at least when I used it, and I'm not sure if they fixed this yet. I don't think they have. But right now you cannot browse to your Mac using SSH, for example, and view a movie or something like that within AirSharing HD. From what I heard, though, is that that's coming. So eventually you'll be able to use AirSharing HD to hop on your Mac via SSH or FTP and browse through whatever you want and tap on a movie and go. Right now that doesn't work, so look at it and make your buying decision based on what it has right now. But it's cool. AirSharing HD, $10.
Very cool.
Okay.
I have it for the iPhone, by the way, and it's great there too, just the iPhone app.
Can you do all the server browsing stuff?
No, it doesn't have as much functionality, but just for moving files back and forth and using it to use your iPhone for storage and PDFs and other documents that you might want to read on the iPhone, it's very convenient.
Yeah, you can read all the documents that the iPhone supports natively, as well as opening with other applications. So if you dump a Pages file into that, you can actually open that within Pages. You can't open it; it copies over to Pages and then you read it.
Right. So. The new document support that we talked about in the last
right.
show that is broken.
Yeah, and I think that you can listen to audio in this version for the iPad. I think you can watch video and audio on the iPhone version, right, Adam? Do you remember?
I haven't tried that. I used it mainly as a bunch of people had asked me what's a good app for just getting documents onto my iPhone or iPod Touch. This was, a couple years ago.
Yep.
And that was the best one that I had, that I found of the ones that I tried and the one I liked the best. So it's the one that stayed on my phone.
Yep.
So that's my endorsement for it. So I haven't tried the iPad version, been meaning to. So
you should definitely check it out. It's cool.
I think it's good. Yeah, because the iPhone version is great. So
yep, AirSharing HD. And with that, I will say that you can find right now show notes and iPhone picks, iPhoneLA.com/podcast. And again, that's going to be changing soon. So be aware of that. You can check out our sponsor, GoToAssist Express. You get a free 30-day trial. Go to assist.com/Ally. You can send feedback to podcast@iPhoneLA.com. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, and twitter.com/jgamet.
Thanks, as always. It's always a roller coaster of fun.
Yes. Thanks for being here, Jeff. And Adam Christensen can be found at the MacCast, maccast.com, and twitter.com/maccast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Well, that's correct. Thank you.
And my Twitter, if you, I don't talk about iPhone stuff or anything. It's just mostly poop jokes, but twitter.com/MichaelJohnston if you're interested in poop jokes.
I have to be very really.
Who isn't? Yeah, I have to be very clear though, because sometimes people get confused when they start following me.
Hey, understandable.
Yeah.
one point of order with you, Michael, because sure. I got asked the question, and maybe you don't know yet, and that's a perfectly legitimate answer. But somebody did ask me if the feed is going to be changing.
No.
The feed, bro.
So the feed, if you can check it in iTunes. I'm not sure, but if you check it in iTunes, it should point to a feed burner URL. If it's pointed to iPhoneAlley.com, then you have the wrong feed. But it's all for most of the people who subscribed through iTunes, it should be pointing to a feedburner.com feed. And in that case, you'll be fine. When we switch to a new site, you won't even realize it.
Perfect.
Yep.
That's awesome. Okay.
Thanks.
I love
it when it works like that.
Yep. Okay. And with that, another We Have Communicators is done.
Hey.
And we need an outro bumper thing. A card out.
Picard out.
Oh. Picard out. And an internet
community. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. No.